Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Welcome along to The D Word. Glad you could join me again for another hour of dementia chat and music. Alzheimer's Disease International released the latest World Alzheimer's Report in September. This year it looks at attitudes to dementia, and I'm delighted to be able to welcome back Wendy Weidner, who worked on the report, to tell us all about it. Wendy will be joining me after this from Pogo. Forever from Pogo, legacy of me clearing out an old cupboard full of vinyl where I found that. My guest this week is Wendy Weidner from Alzheimer's Disease International, who I first spoke to about the World Alzheimer's Report 2023. A year has passed, and it's great to have Wendy back to talk about the latest report that looks at attitudes to dementia. Well, Wendy, it's great to welcome you back as my guest here on the D Word. Going to be talking about the World Alzheimer's Report 2024, which was published in September, Global Changes in Attitudes to Dementia. I'm right in saying this is a follow-on from a survey that was done in 2019.
Yeah, that's right. We actually, thank you for having me again to join you. It's great to see you. And yeah, it's a follow-on from 2019, and we were tasked in 2019 by our board to sort of find out what the sort of baseline was for stigma across the globe and to try to do something to tackle it. As an advocacy organization, this is something that's very high on our list. And so we went about doing that in 2019. We collaborated with London School of Economics to do that survey and analysis of the sort of situation across the globe. And we had some really surprising results to that. And we decided to do a 5-year follow-on this year, also along with London School of Economics, to see what had changed.
It's
So.
quite an organized. It's 40,000 responses from over
Yes.
166 countries. So that's quite a
Yeah.
thing to get all that together.
Yeah, it was. And a lot of it was, we have to thank our members because, we have 105 members across the globe because we're a global federation of Alzheimer's associations. And really, those members took it on to really promote the survey in their countries. And we had it translated, the survey itself translated into about 35 different languages, which was also facilitated by our members. So that was quite a process to, and something that was quite interesting that came out of this, we didn't put it in the report, just anecdotally, that, to make it easier for some of our members, we used AI to translate, to do a first translation of the survey question. And then we would give it to one of our members to really look over and make sure that the language was correct. And what we found was that the AI was using stigmatizing language, which is quite interesting because you think AI is programmed by humans, so we have to be aware that there's stigmatizing language in terms of dementia being used by AI. And it's also AI learns, doesn't it? And so that's another issue that if there's nobody to sort of correct that, that language is out there and being used across all systems. So that in itself was quite interesting.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting part. I mean, kind of delving into it, there's a lot of stats, but I've just picked out a few headlines, and some are kind of concerning, and some, it's kind of a bit of good and a bit of bad, really, in terms of looking at the statistics. One of them that I picked out in terms of knowledge, that 80% of people think dementia is a normal part of aging, which
Yeah.
is kind of worrying in itself, but also really worrying that it's up from 66% 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's very true. And we were surprised about that as well. And I think you might also be ready to mention this, but we even more surprising was that healthcare professionals, that number had also increased as well. In 2019, 62% thought that it was a normal part of aging. Well, now it's 65%. And so across the board, this sense of knowledge about what dementia is and what it is not, it is worrying because it's not a normal part of aging. We know it's a syndrome and it's caused by several different diseases of the brain. And if you don't think that something is actually something that needs to be diagnosed, then as a healthcare professional, you might not diagnose it, and then that person won't get access to the health, to the support that they need, nor will their family. And so we were quite clear in the report and our recommendations that this is really fundamental, that we have to make sure that we're getting the right message out there. We've got all these campaigns that are running, talking about dementia-friendly communities, which is important, but actually we have to be very specific about the language we use and very clear so that people have a very clear understanding about what dementia is and what it is not.
Yeah, and I guess that goes to what you were saying about AI just a couple of moments ago, that if he's learning and all that is out there, then he's learning the wrong thing, if you can put it that way. But interesting, I
Yeah.
mean, you mentioned healthcare professionals, and another interesting thing that came out of it for me was that 85% of health professionals would give a diagnosis if they felt there was a treatment to slow decline down.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if, well, we're not actually given a diagnosis because we can't do anything.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we've heard before, and this is the new question that we added. We used the same questionnaire that we used in 2019, but we also added a few questions. And the reason that we added that was because in the last few years, there have been some disease modifying treatments that have come onto the marketplace. They're not available in all countries, but in some countries they are. And we wanted to know whether or not that made a difference because we have found, we have been told in primary care that some doctors, GPs say, well, I don't, what can I do for this individual? I can't sort of provide them with any sort of treatment. And therefore, I'm not going to provide them with a diagnosis. There's a sense of apathy, like, what can I do about it? And we wanted to know whether a drug made a difference, whether people, whether it made a difference for individuals thinking, oh, I know if I've got a treatment, I'm more likely to go get a diagnosis, or if it would make a difference for healthcare professionals. And of course, we also know that it's not, the disease modifying treatments that are out there right now only help a very small percentage of people. You know, we're still very early in this race towards finding a cocktail of medication that we can give to individuals, but there are things that we can do. So, there's a whole raft of psychosocial interventions and supports that we can give a family beyond symptomatic drugs that we can give to them. So, that diagnosis is a real entry point to sort of care and support that people really need. And we were quite interested to see whether or not the prospect of some sort of treatment would make a difference in terms of diagnosis. And it looks like it did.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet mixed with water and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colors or preservatives, just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UK Radio to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active, super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Started a joke, which started the whole world crying. Oh, but I didn't see that the joke was on me. Oh no, I started to it started the whole world laughing. Oh, if I'd only seen that the joke was on me.
Bee Gees song, I Started a Joke by Rosalind Witter. Well, we are in December, so I think it's safe to mention Christmas. And as usual, we'll be looking back over some of the highlights of the year over the festive period. So if there's a guest you'd like to hear again, do let us know by dropping an email to tdwradio@gmail.com. My guest this week is Wendy Widener from Alzheimer's Disease International.
Yeah, it's interesting for healthcare professionals. I mean, because I guess they are talking and thinking along the kind of medical route, whereas you just mentioned all the social things that we can do. And I know in the UK, it's kind of still in its infancy. We've got social prescribing, where will prescribe things which are not down the pharmacological route. And it'd just be interesting that health professionals don't, you know, in saying 85% of them don't want to give a diagnosis, I don't think they can do anything. I guess the message has got to get across about all those social interventions as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I mean, I live in a small village in the UK. And I think social prescribing is quite patchy around the UK, isn't it? I mean, it's available in some areas and it's not available in others. And I think in areas where it is available, it is so valuable to people living with dementia, but also to their families, their carers. Because part of the messaging that we think is important is that, you know, when we talk about getting the message right, it's not just about being really clear. It's also being clear that people living with dementia can live well and they can have active and productive lives. And that actually it's not something like you get it and that's the end for you, that there is still an opportunity for people to give back to the community, that they don't have to be sort of isolated and locked away. And these kind of treatments, social prescribing, one of them or other types of treatments like cognitive stimulation therapy or anything like that, brings people into communication with either programs that help support them. It keeps them from isolating themselves in their homes and enables them to have that sort of interaction that will just increase their well-being. So you're absolutely right. There's a lot more we can do than just giving somebody an infusion.
One of the good things that I saw that came out of it was the effect of what people would consider to be an unhealthy lifestyle and the precursors, if you like, to developing dementia, which of course last year's report was, focusing on. So it must be good that at least the number of people that are actually putting together those lifestyle factors and dementia is now going up.
Yeah, I think that's a it's excellent, isn't it? And I mean, we say that, and this follows on from the from what we were just talking about. If you don't have access to some sort of a therapy that is going to modify that your dementia, then the next best thing is to reduce your risk. And you can continue to reduce your risk even when you have dementia. That goes, it's a lifelong pursuit. And so we were glad that all of this talking that we're doing about risk reduction on a global basis seems to be gaining traction in high-income countries. But the thing we were quite surprised about in the report is that those messages actually, the number of people that thought that, dementia is a sort of caused by an unhealthy lifestyle, that number actually reduced in low and middle income countries. So it was at 78%. And now it's gone down to 58%. So fewer people understand that an unhealthy lifestyle could impact dementia. And so, whereas we're getting it right in some places, we have to reinforce those messages in other places.
I guess, looking at the statistics that come out of the whole report, the world now is a lot different to it was in 2019. And in that interim, we've had a global pandemic, we've got, wars, we've had global financial meltdowns and whatever. And I guess that must all have an effect on, on what people say.
I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? We remarked on, we are in a different place. We there's no beating around the bush. This is exactly, why are the numbers different? What is it that makes it different? We've been pondering this, and you can only look at the data that you have, and you can't sort of infer too much. But we do know that, when you have communities that are going through a crisis, whether it's a financial crisis or a pandemic or a humanitarian crisis like a war, it's often these sort of marginalized communities that are the most impacted. And that, we saw that happen with COVID. People living with dementia were hugely impacted during that time. And I think in these times where they're quite uncertain, it's a group that possibly is, I don't know, it's sometimes I feel that people who have that are marginalized in this way, that can't advocate for themselves, can't advocate and are a quieter voice, are the ones that are impacted the most, and often the people that are left to advocate for people with dementia are their carers who might be exhausted, frankly, or advocacy organizations. And it's, I think it's really up to us and charities to really be that voice. And that was what we were trying to sort of get across in the recommendations, that it's so complex when you look at stigma. It's influenced by so many different things. But there's something that each of us can do. And if you look at the recommendations, we sort of break it down into sort of what the public can do, what some of the structural things that need to change. But then we talk about the individual, and we sort of finish up with the five things you can do yourself. Because I think often when something is so overwhelming, you think, ah, there's nothing I can do about it, and you almost get paralyzed. But we thought, let's give each individual a guide for just themselves. If you have five things that you can do as an individual, then, it's like a ripple in a pond. It starts to change,
Yeah, I've got them in front of me. Number one was educate yourself, which we've talked about. Number two is it's interesting. It says reach out to someone living with dementia, and when you look back in the report, and you see one of the things that people tend to find difficult is how to communicate with someone living with dementia, and that's the kind of first part of reaching out, isn't it?
That's right. And I think there's a fear that people have because there was, I think, I can't remember what the exact statistic was. Now there are so many statistics in there, but there was a sense that people living with dementia were dangerous and impulsive, and you didn't really know what was going to happen next, and that those numbers had increased from 2019. And I think actually, coming out of that lack of knowledge is a fear, and what we were trying to break down is, and I think this comes back to the messaging that actually people living with dementia, there are communication techniques that you can use, and there are tools out there, and that's why we've got resources on our website. There's an anti-stigma toolkit that was developed by a project that ADI was involved in, but London School of Economics was also involved in it, that enables communities to sort of break it down and communicate. And just sort of often I think it's techniques that you try to understand what the person's needs are at the moment. I think often when there's a misunderstanding, and a person living with dementia is thought to have been aggressive, quote unquote, aggressive, it's because they have some sort of unmet need or fear that they can't express. And it's often just taking the time to step back and try to look at the situation and figure out what it is. That person might be hungry. They might be thirsty. They might need to use the toilet. They might just be uncomfortable at that moment. What can you do to de-escalate that situation, and just get one to one, get on their level, and face to face, and have a chat with them? I mean, honestly, they still connect with emotion, and depending on what stage of dementia this person is experiencing. But often you'll find that the conversations just flow. And often if you just stay in the moment and talk about things that are happening right then at the moment, or things that you know that they might have enjoyed in their life before, that you'll see the conversation will just start to flow.
Said she'd had enough, and she packed up her things. Said I'd give you chance after chance, and she reached for keys. She rattled off all my faults like I didn't have a clue, and she headed for the front door. I said, darling, couldn't you tell me something I don't know? Tell me something I ain't figured out. Tell me you'll come back tonight, and you're just mad right now. Tell me something that'll really blow my mind. Tell me tomorrow you'll still be mine before you go. Tell me something I don't know. Tell me that you're still in love. We can work this thing out. Tell me I can change your mind, and then maybe tell me how. Before you start that car and put it into drive, please tell me what comes next for us. Will you shed a little light? Tell me something I don't know. Tell me something I ain't figured out. Tell me you'll come back tonight, and you're just mad right now. Tell me something that'll really blow my mind. Tell me tomorrow you'll still be mine before you go. Tell me something I don't know. Park as you're heading out of town, you tell me that you'll think of us and turn that car around. Tell me something I don't know. Tell me something I ain't figured out. Tell me you'll come back tonight, and you're just mad right now. Tell me something that'll really blow my mind. Tell me tomorrow you'll tell me something I don't know. Tell me something I don't know. Said she'd had enough and she packed up her things. Said I'd give you chance after chance and she reached for keys.
Alex Key and Tell Me Something I Don't Know here on The D Word, where I'm chatting to my guest Wendy Widener about the World Alzheimer's Report 2024.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some of my friends who live in dementia say that we find it difficult in your world, so you're going to have to come into ours. And that's the kind of key in terms of communication. Number three on the list was advocate, which is a really interesting one, because a little bit further in the report, it says dementia is a political issue, that 83% of people believe their vote can influence policy. But I can only talk for the UK. We've recently had an election. There was only one of the major parties that actually mentioned the word carer in its manifesto. And the words dementia were hardly mentioned at all. So it's kind of difficult to square that a little bit with 83% of people believing that their vote's going to actually influence something.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I think, you know, one of the things that we've certainly found is that you've talked earlier about the sort of crises that the world's going through right now, financial crises, climate crises, all these different things. And so there are so many competing interests for a politician or for a government. This is why I think that messaging is so important, because if you use really discriminatory messaging, showing people as sort of hollowed out individuals, then it creates this sense of apathy with government, where they think, well, what's the point putting money into that? You know, I've got to put money into this other thing because there is a much louder need, if you see what I mean. And that's why getting that message around, you know, getting that message clear to governments that actually there is something that can be done for people living with dementia. They can live productive lives, that their carers need that support. This is how you can advocate in a much more positive way, that you show this is, you know, we know that populations are aging. This is something that's not going to go away. We know that this is the leading cause of death in the UK. So just to talk about our country, the country that we both live in, this is a priority. This is not going to go away. And the costs are only going to increase if we don't support families now to go through that. So, I think you're absolutely right. It's people have a sense that if they vote, they can have an impact. And yet you can't just rest on that. You have to keep drumming away at it because there are so many competing interests.
And I guess, you know, one of the ways across the world you can do that is with national dementia plans, of which, you know, we're sadly lacking in the UK. We've had David Cameron talk about it. We've had Boris Johnson talk about it. But, you know, the paper's still not arrived. But, you know, there are good examples out there, aren't there, of national dementia plans?
Yes. Yeah. And I think this is the best way to ensure that any sort of care is legislated and sustainable if it is put into policy, and then there's an implementation of that care policy and there's a follow-up to make sure that it's been done. And the big key is around a budget for it, isn't it? And I think what we found, you know, we do another publication on a yearly basis that's called From Plan to Impact, which is looking at the global action plan on dementia and whether or not people are using that to develop national dementia plans, because this is the document that comes out of the World Health Organization and the member states of WHO agreed unanimously in 2017 that, 75% of the countries that were member states are going to have a national dementia plan. Well, we're far from that, because I think there's only about 39 now. But we know that actually, a plan that's put in place in a country actually then ring fences money and an actual plan, an actual care pathway for people to gain access to support. And that's the best way to do it, because it creates a sustainability then, Otherwise, it's very easy to sort of put that money into something else. And then again, the silent majority is lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to that issue we were talking about, I mean, number four, reduce your own risk, which we've talked about, and in terms, I would suggest anybody who wants to know anything about that, read the report from last year, which has, got the whole lot in it. And the final one is post about dementia, use social media, and it's almost a kind of shout from the rooftops, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because we know that's what everybody does. Everybody's on social media, so why not use that in a very positive way? And I know there are a lot of people, a lot of occupational therapists and nurses and people that do great work on Instagram that just give very practical tips about how you can support people living with dementia. And all of that serves to raise awareness and sort of break down some of those barriers. And your podcast, you talk to all sorts of people living with dementia, people working in policy, other journalists. This is really important to get the word out there.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Love and laugh. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Kiss me quick.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I also think it's always, I suppose it goes back to what we were saying a little bit earlier, is that people living with dementia, a lot of people will say, well, oh, they won't be able to do social media, or they can't do this, they can't do that. I've got a really good friend living with dementia, Pete Middleton, who's exploring AI in areas that I wouldn't even think of going near.
Wow.
I have others who are very nice, good artists and whatever. And I suppose it is rounding off that whole stigma thing that just because someone's got a diagnosis, it doesn't mean they can't write, it doesn't mean they can't, actively play a part in things like social media.
Exactly. And we have a board member at ADI. Her name is Emily Ong, and she lives in Singapore. She's tremendously busy on social media. She's got the most fantastic LinkedIn posts. She does a blog. She's involved in so many different groups, and she co-chairs with me. We have a advisory group that we started this last year at ADI called the Global Dementia Expert Panel, and it's got people living with dementia and carers from all over the world and from every region. And she co-chairs that with me. And she's it's amazing what she the things that she posts from her perspective of a person living with cognitive issues, you know. And I think that really is very central to everything that we're talking about, that any sort of messaging that we do has to show that kind of representation of a person living with dementia, that there's a whole spectrum. You know, there are people that are, as you say, very able to continue with whatever their work was, to post about things that are important to them or things that they're struggling with. It's all quite meaningful, and that raises that profile, and that helps us learn what dementia is all about, really, in from the voice of people who are actually experiencing it.
Yeah, Emily's great. I follow her on LinkedIn. I mean, I would advise everybody to have a look at the report. It's available. Just download the PDF. Don't be scared off by the statistics because they are very interesting. And also the really interesting bit for me always is the essays at the end, which are, real stories. And there's some real gems in there. One of them, kind of particularly for me working in the media, there's one about challenging dementia stigma in popular culture and why we need media guidelines, which is a really interesting one because I pick up papers and I see stories and I think, you sometimes wince and think, why did you use those words? Why did you say that? But to be fair to the journalist, perhaps, you've got a whole load of things to cover. And they need a bit of guidance as well.
That's right. I mean, you only know what you know. And that's why if there is some sort of a structure for people to follow, so they know they're using the right language. Language, it's fluid, isn't it? I mean, I love all the essays in the back. Like you, those are always the bits I love the most because they give you a flavor of a real global perspective. There's sort of the expert essays, and then there's real lived experience of people, as you say, and then also some of the programs that are sort of combating stigma. And I think it's so important to share the experience from a global perspective, you know, not just a few statistics from a few countries, you know, and also different sectors, because there's also there's, as you say, bits on language, there's bits on training, there's bits on people's experience and how hard it was to get a diagnosis. There's some real gems, as you say, in the essays in the back.
Yeah, I think one of the most positive ones was the dementia attitudes amongst British adolescents, because generally it was positive. And, they are the people of the future. They're going to be the dementia carers of the future. They're going to be dementia professionals of the future. And I think sometimes we ignore that part of the age range when we shouldn't, because they're not judgmental. And we could actually learn a lot from the way that they approach things like dementia.
No, I agree. I agree. And there's also another essay about people who are young carers and what their experience is as well. I think you're right. It's important to realize that, you know, just like with the risk reduction, when we were talking about that being sort of a life course thing, you know, when you have somebody who's living with dementia in your family, it impacts everyone. It impacts young people as well. And that, you know, the better positive ways that we can model for young people, and vice versa, they can model some positive behavior for us, the better, really.
And there's simple things as well. I'll just pull on one other, which was the changing terminology in Japan. And that's how changing one word can actually make such a massive difference.
It's amazing, isn't it? And again, that goes back to the thing that we talked about at the very beginning, like AI. You know, if these words just are in all written communication, if they're in government documents, if they're, you know, in people's case notes and all of that, they will influence how we react and treat people living with dementia. And that's huge. You know, people become defined by the word you're using. And if you're using a really demeaning word, then you demean that individual. So it's very important to get it right.
Yeah, absolutely true. It's only been out since September, but what's the reaction been so far to the report?
Well, it's been, I think people have been waiting for it. They've been really interested to see whether the changes, any changes have occurred. I think it's had a huge impact because I think there's also a lot in this report about the discrimination that people living with dementia are experiencing, and also anticipated discrimination that people experience, and so anticipated stigma is when you think, oh God, this is going to happen to me, and then it sort of impedes you from taking part in something, and you self-isolate really because you're afraid of sort of any discrimination that you're going to experience. And you can have that on behalf of your loved ones. So what we found is that that has a huge impact on carers, and they're not seeing friends. I mean, almost 50%, almost 47% stopped accepting invites to see their friends, because they were afraid of how the person that they were living with, the person living with dementia, was going to be treated. And so, these sort of anticipatory things are really impeding people. And that comes from the climate that we have around us. So those kind of things have been quite surprising. And what we have found is that ADI has been contacted by a lot of projects of people wanting to do something about stigma. And so that has sort of increased the number of interactions we're having with researchers, policymakers who really want to make a difference. And that's a great outcome. And equally, our members, our member organizations are getting their country level data because they want to use their country level data to advocate within their own countries. So they're not using the global data. If they were able to get enough individuals to respond to the survey in their country, they can take those data and analyze them and bring them to their government and say, look, this is what the situation is in our country. And then they're going to be able to use that to hopefully, advocate for a national dementia plan in their country. So there's a lot of knock-on effects. It's only been, what, 2 months, but it's like a snowball. It's gathering momentum.
Yeah, I think it's a great document. I want to finish with the last lines of the document that says addressing dementia stigma and awareness is within reach for individuals wherever they are across the globe. And I think that kind of sums up the ethos behind the whole report. We can all play a part in this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I often think that sometimes when things seem overwhelming, the best thing you can do is just start with yourself. And that's why we had those five things that each individual can do, and then in your own community. And I think if we did it like that, no matter where we lived, if we started at home, and if even just with individuals making small changes, that can make a huge difference. We can't underestimate our own power in that way.
Well, Wendy, let's keep that snowball rolling. And it's been a pleasure as always. Hope you'll come back next year and we'll talk again about obvious Report 2025. I mean, it never stops,
Okay.
does it?
No, it doesn't. We're always doing it every year.
Okay, thanks so much for being my
Thank
guest.
you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Many thanks to Wendy. Great to chat to her again. The World Alzheimer's Report 2024 Global Changes in Attitudes to Dementia is available to download for free from the Alzheimer's Disease International website, which you can find at www.alzint.org. That's it for this week. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, I'm going to be talking about dentistry with geriatric oral care expert Joy Poskosim. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.